Can you imagine that one day you're not feeling so well, so you go to the doctor, only to find out that you have terminal cancer? And before you know it, you're lying in a bed in a hospice because there's nothing anyone can do. And then something miraculous happens. Well, this is the backstory of today's guest. I want you to meet a very special lady named Wendy Siminski, who I first met only a couple of months ago when I was coaching a group of executives, and she was among them. And there was something about her that immediately jumped out to me. And then when I heard her story, I knew you had to hear it too. Well, she's here today, and I want to welcome you to this episode of Slightly Off Course. Hey, everybody, I am here with Wendy Siminski, and we are sitting down to have a fantastic conversation. Wendy, welcome to the show. Welcome to Slightly Off Course.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So I've just got to let people know, like, how you and I crossed paths was I was actually coaching the executives at your company, which you're amongst them. And we just happened to, you were on Zoom early. And of course, I was there early to get set up. And I can't remember, I think your hair was pink that day or something. You had some pink hair. And so I complimented your hair. And then you were so gregarious and thank you. And then one of your coworkers told me a little bit that there was more to this story. And certainly that's what we want to get to today. So yeah, let's go back in time where all of this began.
Okay, yeah. Well, I started at the organization that you're talking about in the spring of 2018. And we had our first huge, our flagship event was in September. And like a lot of parents, I put off like all of the normal doctor visits and things that you do. And then after you have like a break in the schedule, you do your regular thing. And so I had a mammogram in October and found out that I had stage 2 breast cancer. And it was a devastating blow. There's no history of breast cancer in my family. I learned that the type I had was very aggressive. And so I had to, you know, have a bilateral mastectomy, chemotherapy. I had hyperbaric treatments. I mean, you name it. I went through the gauntlet. And then when you and I met this year, in March of this year, due to COVID, my normal screenings that I would have had a year post treatment. So like the first time I went through cancer, I was in treatment for a year. And then the second year, they monitor you very closely to make sure that it doesn't reoccur. And because of COVID, I was unable to get in to see my oncologist. They did all of their visits by Zoom. And in March of this year, I started feeling very poorly and ended up going to the ER. And there they diagnosed me with metastatic breast cancer. So that's the situation. And yeah.
Can you explain for a lot of people that don't know what metastatic breast cancer is? Can you explain that?
Absolutely. So any other stage of any type of cancer, stage 0 through 3 is curable. There's always a chance that you can recover fully. Stage 4 cancer is incurable. It means the cancer has traveled from one area of your body to distant locations. In my case, I have cancer in my liver, lungs, and spine, and I can never be cured. So I'll be in treatment for the rest of my life. The average lifespan of someone with metastatic breast cancer is usually like 3 years. And when I initially was diagnosed, I was so sick that they were unable to treat me. I went into liver failure, was hospitalized for 2 weeks. And when they sent me home, they said that I was too sick to treat and sent me home to hospice. And I spent 2 months in hospice and refused to die. And so then they told me that I could take the chance and have chemotherapy and see if it worked. And if not, it would just expedite the end. And it worked. And so I'm actually feeling great. Like, I've been living my bonus life right now. It's wonderful. I'm having the very best time. The last 6 months have been the greatest of my life.
Wow. Well, that's such great news. And I can't imagine when your cancer came back and you were feeling terrible, and then they told you that that's incurable, and then actually sent you to hospice, because you were in hospice for how long?
2 months.
Because hospice is where they send you when you're not getting out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when I was diagnosed in the ER, I was admitted into the hospital. I passed out at home like 10 days later. And because my liver had started to fail. And when they did another CT scan of my liver in the hospital, in just a week, like the cancer had advanced so quickly that they just assumed that the progression was just going to be so rapid that there was just no chance. So it was preparing for, like, you know, getting the initial, the cancer's come back, it's spread, you're terminal, you may have, 3 years to, you've got essentially 3 weeks is what they told me when they sent me home.
So how did you adjust to that mentally from, thinking that you were out of the woods and then all of a sudden feeling bad, and now you're in hospice and they're telling you, like, this is it for you? Do you remember that time? Like, what went through your mind?
Yeah, I'm 100%. That's just so many things that I don't remember about that time because of being so ill. But there's one thing that's crystal clear to me. When I got cancer the first time, I promised my girls that I would do everything I could to get better and that I would be fine. And when they told me that I wouldn't be, all I could think about was how I was going to tell them that I had to disappoint them, that I couldn't keep that promise. And so, like, I don't think I ever, and maybe still to this day, like, I mean, I'm sad about what's happening to me. It's unfair, but I'm more sad about the impact that it'll have on my children. And that has centered me throughout this process.
I can't imagine for all of you, and just going through the last year, and obviously your girls, incredibly challenging for them. When you were in hospice, were you fighting the entire time, or did you ever get to a point where you thought, okay, well, I've got to accept certain things?
I mean, I think the first time I considered it battling cancer. This time I just accepted that this is what was going to happen. And I tried to embrace every little thing that I could before it was over. So I refused a lot of help. So, like, everybody wants to help you do things like shower, or go to the restroom or things. And I just, I just couldn't do that. Like, that was like my own thing. I couldn't do that. And then, I would want to sit outside. And everybody was very concerned about me being outside and might I get a chill or anything like that. But I just wanted to enjoy the springtime. I mean, we'd just come out of this terrible COVID year, and it continues. But in the beginning of 2021, we were optimistic, right? And so the flowers were starting to bloom and the air had this great crispness about it. And I just wanted to sit outside, and I don't know. I think that just the desire to experience a little bit more just turned me around. I mean, there's no medical explanation for my turnaround.
So, well, let's talk about that. So they gave you chemo as kind of a last ditch effort, and somehow that grabbed hold and at least put the cancer in remission. Is that correct?
It's not ever considered in, like, full remission. I mean, I'll never be cancer-free just due to the magnitude of the masses that I have in my body. They consider you stable if you are able to, hold off the progression.
This entire experience and where you are today, like, how is the Wendy that I'm talking to today different than the Wendy from 3 years ago?
Oh, I like this Wendy a whole lot better.
Really? So tell me why.
Well, I think that we get so caught up in, like, the everyday drama and you know, we get irritated by the mundane activities that we have to do, like go to the grocery store, or, you know, like maybe we got to grab coffee or whatever it might be. And it's just like an irritation because we have to do it until you can't do it. And then you start to appreciate those things. And so the person I am now is a lot more appreciative of those little things I used to take for granted. I've also had the most extraordinary connection form with my daughters. I've always been a good mom. There was never any doubt in my mind that I was a good mom. But seeing how my children are handling this, my daughter, no kidding, 10 minutes ago before we jumped on this call, told me that 2021 was her very best year ever. And I'm like, hello, can I have a minute here? Like, didn't I get diagnosed? Like, what happened? And she's like, but mom, I've made these new friends. And, you know, we've done all these exciting things together. And if my 12-year-old can have lived through this experience this year and consider it one of her best, obviously, I must be doing something right. I'm teaching them, you know, what to appreciate, quality over quantity.
That's fantastic. When you think back to some of the dark times, and I'm sure there were times where it was so discouraging and the weight was so heavy. And in those moments, what got you through? Like, what kept your spirit up?
I have such an incredible network of friends and family that, you know, said things that we just don't normally say. I mean, that's another thing that I like about my life now. I'm not afraid to tell people how I feel about them. I don't worry about being judged at all. And people feel able to tell me pretty much anything. And so that creates an intimacy, even with strangers, because they just, you know, they can tell that I'm not going to be judgmental or so. I mean, that's an extraordinary gift of going through this experience.
Yeah, I want to come back to both those things you just said. You know, my family, we love each other. I'm talking about my parents and my siblings. Like, we love each other incredibly. We're not the most, how would I say it? We're not the most open in terms of how we feel about each other. Like, rarely does somebody say that they love one another. And, you know, something is just our family. And I think a lot of families grow up like that. A lot of people are like that, even with their friends. They don't really share how they truly feel. So it sounds like this experience changed that for you. Oh. Were you always like that? Or did this change how you expressed?
I've always been very demonstrative with, like, my children, but, you know, other people, I haven't necessarily, you know, been like, I care so much about you, or I respect you, or whatever the case may be. But now I've got nothing to lose. If somebody doesn't want to hear that, and I only say positive things, then, you know, no harm, no foul. I'm not worried about it. And hopefully it makes them feel better. I'm just telling people how I feel about them. And that it often, you know, their normal reaction is then they reciprocate and tell me how they feel about me. And that has been healing to hear people be so supportive. I mean, I had a few mentors professionally as I was coming up in my career, and that took time to, like, guide me and give me support and advice and put me in positions where I would have visibility and do a lot of things for me. And so one of the things that was important to me when I started advancing in my career was to do the same for others. And I've done a lot of that over the years. There's a lot of people that have worked for me that are now off, you know, running large teams at other organizations. And when I was in hospice, one of my dear friends organized a gathering for a bunch of people that I had worked with to get together and just, like, share Wendy's stories. And of course, you know, I happened to have a good day that day, and I'm like, I'm crashing the party. And so I went, and I got to hear the kinds of things that people often say after you're gone. And it's made me, like, work even harder to, like, help the people that I work with now do well professionally. I mean, I've got nothing to lose.
You reminded me of this summer, my parents were having their 60th wedding anniversary. So all of my siblings were flying in and we were going to celebrate. And my mother had this idea. She wanted to have her funeral, like a living funeral where everybody comes in and shares, you know, the impact the person had on their life. But we were all like, no way. There's no way we're having that. but I think the spirit she was going after was exactly this, is that we don't tell each other enough. We don't tell each other enough the impact that people have on us. And which is so sad. I mean, everyone listening right now, there are people that are important to you, people who've crossed your paths that have incredible meaning to you, but then we rarely ever tell them that, which is sad. So thank you for this. I think this is going to be a great catalyst for people listening. And I think what you said there is that I have nothing to lose. And that's really the crux of it, isn't it? That often we're not demonstrative, or we don't tell someone how we really feel about them because we're afraid of losing something, their respect, or afraid of being judged, afraid of being criticized. But when you're not afraid to lose anything, it lets you act unhindered.
I agree. And I think especially with your job, James, like you meet with on a daily basis, like high executives that, you know, are under a microscope. And it's been my experience working with those individuals as well, that sometimes like they feel like the weight of the world is on them. And, you know, when you feel that kind of pressure, it's not a good life. I mean, it seems like you have all of the things that everybody aspires to have, but you're not enjoying it. And so, you know, I think if anybody takes anything from this, it's like, as long as your heart is beating and your lungs still have air and you're breathing, like every day is an opportunity to be better than the day before. And that's why I consider these my bonus days. And I am not exaggerating when I say the last 6 months have been the best of my entire life. And I had a pretty good life up until that point. So
I love how you call this your bonus life. And that's really how we should all think of every day. It's just a bonus day. It would change how we lived. I want to come back to something you said about, I'm not worried anymore about being judged by people. And this is such a universal cancer in itself, right? That people hold themselves back. So a lot of the work I do is helping people get past those limiting paradigms, because we all, in a sense, fear, you know, what's someone going to think of me? So we hold back, we pull back our talents, we pull back our potential, we pull back our affection, whatever it might be, because we're afraid to be judged. Were you like that before this? Did you hold back certain things in your life because you were afraid to be judged?
Definitely. I mean, I was always, I think, worried about, you know, especially professionally, worried about like consequences of maybe being too like risky in my decision making or things like that. And I'm still like, I mean, anything I do professionally is still very measured. But I think that I was always worried about being liked. And when you stop worrying about being liked, it helps a lot. I mean, now I figure the worst possible thing that could happen to a person is happening to me. And it's not fair and it's terrible, but I can make the most of this experience and take, you know, do things that might have held me back in the past, that I may have been concerned that people would think a certain thing about me. But why? Like, why would I limit myself now? I've got, you know, very, very limited time. And I mean, I've spent my entire life up until this point saving up to grow old. And I have been the person that when my friends would ask me to take a vacation or go on a trip, I'd say no, because I'm too busy. I'm working. I've got the kids. Like, I just don't have time for those kind of things. And now, like, think of all the time that I've wasted. So I'm doing everything now. And I mean, I'm taking a trip to Jamaica in January and a cruise in February. And people are like, why would you do that? You're immune compromised and it's COVID. And I'm like, I can die on a cruise or I can die at home. Which would you rather do? And it's not like, I mean, I've dodged a bullet once. I'm pretty confident I'll be okay.
That's such a fantastic outlook that you have in your life. And I was just going to ask, you know, what does that feel like to be able to live your life and just truly be, I don't care what people think?
It's very liberating. I would say probably one of the most impactful relationships that has come about through what I'm going through now is my ex-husband remarried, and his wife is delightful. But we've never been close. And now I'm thinking about her as the future mother of my children. And so things that I wanted to say to her as soon as she came into their life, like, you know, these are things that are important to me. These are things I'm insecure about. These are things that I want the girls to know about me. I would have never said those things like a healthy person. But now I'm very vulnerable with her. And I tell her, you know, what's important to me. And I'm so grateful that she's listened. And, you know, I feel confident that she's going to be, you know, good for them, you know, in the future when I can't be. And that's something that would never have happened had I not just kind of said, you know, I'm going to put myself out there and see what happens.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who are divorced and in a situation like that, they just can't even fathom having a talk with the new wife of their ex-husband. And, you know, Brené Brown talks a lot about vulnerability and the power of that. And how have you seen that make a difference as you've become more vulnerable? What's been the impact of that?
I think I've always kind of been a vulnerable person. Like I've never hesitated to, you know, tell people about my life. I'm a really open person, but I've been vulnerable in telling my story, but I haven't always been vulnerable about my insecurities. And now I do think that I am more articulate in saying, you know, this is specifically what makes me feel good and what makes me feel bad. And that's not something that I was really good at before. But now, I mean, so much of like your physical health is driven by where you are mentally and emotionally. And so I consider it part of like my overall care is to make sure that I am communicating my needs and that helps contribute to, you know, me being happier, me more positive. And I think that is then reflected in my physical well-being.
When you said that when you were in hospice and you were really trying to do a lot of stuff independently, like refuse help, were you always somebody who it was hard for you to accept help? And if so, has that changed?
Yes. And honestly, I'm so glad that you circled back on that, because the first time that I got diagnosed with cancer, I think the number one thing that just blew my mind is I have always been so fiercely independent. You know, I grew up in an environment where I felt like I had to kind of fend for myself, and independence was rewarded. And so when you don't accept help from people, people don't offer it. And I think I was kind of mentally in a place before my diagnosis the first time where I was feeling a little unloved, like no one appreciates me, no one cares about me, no one ever does anything for me. I don't have anybody putting me on a pedestal and doing things for me. And then I got sick. And when word got out what was going on, I swear I could have opened a floral shop in my house. people that I hadn't seen for 10 or 15 years, like, start sending me flowers and get well cards and all of this stuff. And my mind was blown because I had never accepted help. And I didn't realize that people stop offering it when you don't ask for it, right? And then something like this happens where you don't ask for help, and then people start showing you how much they appreciate you. And that has been wonderful. Like, so grateful for that.
I wanted to ask about your girls. They're teenagers, right? I think you said 13 and 14.
12 and 13, yeah.
12 and 13, right. 12 and 13. Have you given them any sort of life advice through this? Or have you found yourself, like, beginning to try to impart life lessons? And if so, what are you saying to them?
Oh, I do it all the time. Like, I mean, it can be something as simple as, like, we're doing something in the kitchen and, you know, I'll say, okay, so, like, this is the way that I do this and you can try it this way. Or when we're talking about finances, sometimes, like, I talk about putting money away, or, like, I mean, anything that I can, just as far as general life skills. But more importantly, I can remember feeling very isolated when I was a kid, going through a lot of angst about things my friends were doing or not doing, and not feeling like I had anyone to talk to, and certainly not my mom. And then as I became an adult, went to college, then my mom and I started having conversations where I was like, oh my gosh, like, I absolutely could have told her these things. Like, she would have understood, she would have related, like, she could have helped me. And so now the best part of the last 6 months is, you know, my girls will come home and they'll say, you know, this happened at school and there was this kind of drama. And I'll say, well, let me tell you a funny story about what I did, like, when I was a kid. And I tell them these things that, like, I can't even believe that I would even tell them sometimes. Like, some of the stuff I'm, like, I probably shouldn't say. I might give them some ideas. But I think it's important for them to know that, like, you know, I think about, like, when my time is over, people come together and they mourn the loss of someone and they say how great a person they were. And I don't want my kids to think that. They know I'm a great person. They don't need anybody telling them that I'm a great person. What they need is people telling them about hard times that I had and how I got through it. So that's what I've been talking about with the girls, not you know, my achievements, but the worst times that I've experienced and how I got through them.
What would you say to someone who's is going through a tough time right now? So maybe they're not battling cancer. Maybe their relationship with their spouse is rocky or ending. Maybe financially they're going through incredible stress, maybe heading towards bankruptcy. Maybe they've lost their job and life's just hard for them. What advice would you give for them in terms of, especially in the, about being resilient? What would you say?
I think that I've learned that you have to live one day at a time. If you start thinking about a challenge that you're going through, like any of the ones that you've described, like, sometimes it just feels like the grief or the pain or the struggle is insurmountable. And the way that I move ahead every day is, every day is an opportunity for me to make some progress in that area. And I can find joy even in the worst of times, right? It doesn't matter. Even when I was in hospice, it's not like there weren't times that I was laughing or that I was hugging my children. Like, there were so many joyous moments, even, you know, as I was on my deathbed, right? So, you know, try to focus on finding the joy in every day and just make incremental progress. Just tiny little baby steps towards improving your situation. And then the next thing you know, you're 6 months out of hospice and planning vacations in the new year.
That's fantastic. And fantastic advice, by the way. So as we're recording this, it's just before New Year's. And so I want to ask you, what is New Year's going to be like for Wendy? When you think about resolutions or goals, Like, how are you approaching it this year?
I have made the decision that I'm going to be really open about what I'm going through. And you know, this is part of, like, when you invited me to do this, you have no idea how much that means to me and is kind of fitting in with like what I'm trying to achieve in the time that I have. And part of that is like bringing comfort to people, like hopefully inspiring them to try to keep going, to just keep moving forward no matter what, and enjoying the journey instead of focusing on a specific destination. So 2022 for me is going to be just focusing on spectacular moments. I mean, a bucket list item I've always had is to go to the Kentucky Derby. And I told a former work colleague that that was on my bucket list. And a couple months ago, I got a call from, you know, the organizers of the Kentucky Derby, and I'm invited to go this year and like stand on the rail and meet all the racehorses. I mean, it was so phenomenal. So I'm just going to focus on these incredible experiences that I can have personally. I'm not going to project anything on my children. I'm just going to enjoy what they enjoy, go to lots of soccer games, take trips with them, without them, just live the very best life. I mean, I look at the years that I've had so far, and I have lived and had the most incredible experiences that a lot of people won't have in their entire life. And I just packed them in, right? They just happened in a very short period of time. And it just goes to show you just how much joy and happiness you can have in a very short period of time if you just like think about it and enjoy. And if you're not enjoying something, get out of it. Get out of it.
Time, yes, because time is precious. That's a great story about going to the Kentucky Derby. Are you going to have to buy one of those big hats?
Yeah, fascinator. I'm so excited.
That's fantastic. Well, I love what you said about enjoying the journey. And in so many ways, it's like you're living how we're all supposed to live. Like you're living now how we're all supposed to live. Like waking up grateful about life, savoring life, you know, even all the research about happiness is all the things that you're doing. And even as you said, you've been able to pack so much joy into a little bit of a time, but it all came because you've changed your mindset about life itself, right? Like it's become more precious because it's limited. But the thing is, it's limited for all of us. Like all of us, our days are numbered. And you know, who knows? Hopefully it's not my last day, but it could be my last day. And if it is, then what a great joy I had to be able to have this conversation with you. But maybe that's sometimes part of our problem is that we're just living someplace else, usually in the future or in the past, but never living in the moment. And it sounds like that's like what you've been able to do.
Definitely. And I think we're very focused on self. And when you think about having limited time, the real impact that you have that like, you know, it turns out to be the investment of your time is in people, the people around you. So, you know, when I talk about having these positive experiences, a lot of it has to do with like, you know, every conversation like this one, like hopefully when we hang out today, you know, you think to yourself like, wow, like, you know, I had a really horrible day, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was like the worst, but man, look at how positive she is given the circumstances. That kind of impact, like, I think, yeah, being focused in the moment is incredibly important. And, but you get a lot of joy and fulfillment out of doing things for others during, you know, time. Like, so when you're struggling, sometimes like directing some of your attention outward is also really helpful, I think.
Do you find that sometimes you will still think off into the future and that will create fear for you and you have to pull that back? Or have you overcome that?
I've definitely not overcome that. I mean, I mean the kinds of conversations that I have to have with my children, my ex is allergic to cats. And one of my daughters has wanted a cat her entire life. And spoiler alert, I got her an amazing cat for Christmas. And I worried so much about it because the reality is that this cat will outlive me. And I have to make decisions like that every day. You know, I mean, people like, I signed up for a home warranty service and they're like, we can give you a discount for a 5-year plan. I'm thinking, maybe I don't pay up front for that one. I mean, I have to make hard decisions like that all the time that are difficult, make me very mindful of my reality, but I try and put humor in everything. And it helps.
I could certainly tell you do. And that's a great story about the cat. Is that actually a revenge cat? Is that a revenge cat?
No. I actually feel terrible. And speaking of his new wife, she is lovely. And I like, we were like co-conspirators on this. And she's like, you know what, Wendy, do what you want to do. It's your time to spend however you want. And so I do have like a backup plan if I would get sick and have friends that would take the cat. And like, I mean, talking about small goals, my goal is to get at least one of my daughters to college so that they can take the cat with them.
That's awesome.
And I did buy a hypoallergenic cat, if there is such a thing. So maybe he'll change his mind and take it in if necessary. But
So obviously, because of COVID, you were not able to get screened, and that obviously that affected you. And I'm sure it's affected so many people who've not got screened, but maybe they're putting it off. So what's your advice to not only the women, but to men?
I mean, lots of companies are coming out and saying that based on their stats, screenings are down because of 2020 and COVID. I know from my own experience that because my cancer wasn't caught the spread initially, that's how I ended up in hospice. I mean, my advice is if you have put off a normal screening, you don't think you have a family risk. I mean, I had no family history. Do not delay those types of procedures. If you're fearful of COVID, if you're getting vaccinated, you're getting your booster, you're wearing a mask, like that's good protection against COVID. But if you delay in having a screening that could catch cancer, early detection is key. And so that's what is much more important to save your life.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. And, as we bring things to a close here, I just wanted to finish by telling you how much you've inspired me. And, you know, from the moment that I first met you on Zoom, I could just tell like, wow, this woman has just a ton of energy and you just radiated joy. So I would not have expected that you had been through so much of a personal hell in the previous months and especially this year. And then here you are already back at work. Like most people would be like, I'm not working anymore. Like I'm not doing it. But there you are. And not only having an impact with your family, but you're having an impact on your employees and everybody around you. So if you've impacted me, and then of course, when I wanted to circle back, I really wanted to talk to you because I knew there's something about you. There's something about how you think or how you have been molded through this fire that I think so many people could stand to benefit from. So you inspire me. I want to say that. I know you're going to inspire so many people who are listening to this. And Wendy, I want to say thank you for being on the show. Thank you for the time.
I'm so grateful.
It's our privilege. And we wish you all the best. And we hope that you are here for many, many, many more years to come, that you surprise everyone with that because you're a true gift to the world. And the world needs more people like you. So thank you for the lessons you've passed on today. I know they're going to help me for sure.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Since sitting down with Wendy, I keep thinking about her phrase about her bonus life and how much richer it is for her because she's soaking everything in, being more vulnerable, and telling people how she really feels about them. and she's not afraid of what people think anymore. All of these are elements of a life well lived. Well, I hope you found inspiration today, and whatever you're going through, whatever tough times, whatever setbacks, whatever obstacles, I hope you're able to put them all in perspective and live as if it's your bonus life. For today's show notes, along with how you can connect with Wendy, go to jamesrobbins.com/episode-6. That's episode-6. Well, that's it for today. And one more thing, please get your scans, make those doctor appointments. If you've been putting any of those things off, let's get on the phone and schedule our screenings today. All right, until next time, I'm James Robbins, and this is Slightly Off Course.